Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a gathering of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank my dear friend Mary for extending the privilege of me participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I got sober and managed to stay that way. And the reason I tell you that, because everything that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think people get sober by the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think everybody gets sober by the grace of God. But I've managed to stay sober by the application of these principles. I have one, thanks. I'm a two-fisted drinker, but not tonight. Maybe later. Now, I've been sober for a little while now, and being an active participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm given the opportunity from time to time to go back and look over my past. For you who are new, for you who can't make it, it's called an inventory. And in that thing, I always look in that inventory for one particular little thing. I look for whatever it was I did way back there somewhere that would entitle me to live this good life that I live today. And so help me, I can't find it. I keep looking, but I can't seem to find it, because if I could find out whatever it was I did before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I sure as hell go back and do it again. Because I have a very good life today. I know that may make you, if you're new, a little nervous. But if you're new, I can tell you something about you right now a lot of people don't know. I'm not going to be up here that long. But if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell you this: you haven't had a very good year. I was at a meeting the other night, and we had one of these, I call them yo-yos. I mean, they're in and out every 15 minutes. And this one guy come up to me and he said, I had SLIP, that same thing of treatment centers work for relapse. And I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, I got drunk over the weekend. I had SLIP. And there was a gal over there that my wife sponsored who'd just come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I called her over. I said, tell them how long your SLIP was. And she said, I've been out 2.5 years. I looked at this yo-yo, I said, that's a slip. 2.5 years is a slip. A little weekend near beer is not a goddamn slip, I'll tell you that. Near beer is for non-near alcoholics. I just want you to know that. Now, I don't even know why I'm sober, to tell you the truth. I guess it has something because I don't drink. And I don't even know... when I became an alcoholic, to tell you the truth. I really don't know anything about it at all. I look back on my life, and it seemed like to me that I was born needing some type of an answer. Now, the problem with that was I didn't know what my problem was. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what your problem is. Now, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm a little restless and irritable and discontented. But I don't understand until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous that that's the symptoms of the most deadly illness that's ever been known to mankind. My sponsor tells me there's written history that stretches back on alcoholism for over 5,000 years, and I didn't know that. I knew a lot about whiskey because everybody in my family drank whiskey. I mean, they made it, they sold it, and they drank it. And they did what people who do stuff like that do. They gathered up on Saturday night and beat the hell out of one another. That's what they did. I mean, they were Irish. They had no religion to hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy, them people. My uncles drank whiskey and went to penitentiaries. My aunts drank whiskey and worked in them whorehouses on the other side of the tracks. My mother got drunk and beat up my dad. Dad got drunk and beat up my mother. Every once in a while, they both got drunk and beat me up. I was whiskey fed to people. But I don't remember saying whiskey's bad, 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 bad. I thought, well, I'm going to find a way out of this dilemma. I don't like the way these people act. And so I looked up one day and saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober 47 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. I used to tell her you ought to have a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she needed, it seemed like to me, out of the churches she went to. She used to get up on Sunday mornings, and they'd use her house for a war zone that night. There'd be bodies laying everywhere. And she'd step over and put on her best dress or whatever she had was good, and she took off. She'd gone for a couple hours, and she came back. Something had happened to her. She was a little lighter in her step and a little ease in her being. She kind of danced around these people and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that and filed that in my key in alcoholic mind. For you who are new in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the key in alcoholic mind. You ain't going to Al-Anon and hear about the key in alcoholic mind, I can tell you that. But because I don't know any better, I get this idea in my head that all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. See, I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. You can't put enough whiskey in my grandmother to make alcoholic. I didn't know that. So I went one day with my grandmother. I put my hand in my grandmother's hand because I was my grandmother's fair-haired boy. And I put my hand in my grandmother's hand, and I went over and sat in my grandmother's church on Sunday and waited for something to happen to me. I watched it happen to Granny. She was getting after it over there. And I don't remember anything happening to me at all, to tell you the truth. But I've come to understand, since I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, there was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church at all. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. See, what I'm doing in that church is what I did all of my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time after I'm here. I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here, which only goes to prove to me that the problem's always been there. And my answer came in a kind of particular way. I sat on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day and watched my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. My grandfather put it down and went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink. That's all I did. I don't remember saying it was bad or nothing. I just picked it up and took a drink of it. And the next couple of minutes of my life, I've come to understand, is what makes me an alcoholic. Oh, I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, it's really not a bad reaction, if you want to know the truth. I mean, if it had been a bad reaction, you'd have some Al-Anon speaker up here tonight. That's all I can say. I mean, I hear people get up and say they took a drink and snot run out of their nose and they puked. And I never liked the taste of that. I want to go hit them. I mean, that's like bad-mouthing an old girlfriend or something. You know what I mean? I mean, alcohol's the best friend I ever had, for Christ's sake. What alcohol did for me is one very little simple thing. It kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I hadn't taken a drink, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. That's just my life. Now, what happened to me when I took that drink is the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. And 3 days later, they pulled me off from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me off a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to Nuthouse, if you want to know the truth. I mean, it's a little more macho. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you're going to be bad for Christ's sake, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I threw everything in the battle. I threw it all in there, lost it. Didn't know what I was fighting. I walked out of institution from the time I was 9 years old until I was 30, as physically sober as I am this moment. Not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink and go out there and kill your baby brother? Boy, you think that's funny. Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and tear your mother's heart out one more time? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and stand on them street corners and run with them gangs and commit them atrocities out there? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and do it again, no? You see, I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics of my type, our book writes about, do not drink after being sober for a period of time to get drunk. We don't drink to go out and have a party. We just drink to go, whew. But you see, if you're an alcoholic of my type, the thing that happens next is what drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. Because then I'm afflicted with the thing that's called the phenomenon of craving. See, once I take a drink of alcohol, once I put alcohol into my system, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. But I was sitting on a street corner on a furlough when I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. The reason you never heard of it is because it was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. It never saw grape, never got near Lodi. But it gets you. I'm drinking this stuff, and I don't know whether it's working or whether it's not working. And I'm sitting with my little gang, and we're trying to be gangbangers, and we're trying to act tough and smell tough and be tough. And one of my pals tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take this? Thank God you weren't X-lax. That's all I can say. Well, you can imagine what would be going on in these 7 a.m. discussion meetings. Work. That's all I can tell you. Work. It's like lighting the afterburners on a rocket ship. Only this rocket ship took me straight to hell. And if hell's been any hotter where I've been, if you've been there, then I hope I don't ever go there. Because a couple of years later, I'm on a furlough from another reform school, and I'm sitting on that same street corner with my little gang, and we're drinking this cheap wine, and we're eating these pellets, and we might have been smoking a little non-habit-forming weed, for all I know. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm running in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy every single thing that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. There's a reason for that, you see. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm self-serving. I get an ego bigger in this whole building. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. For a long time after I was here, maybe even a great deal of the time today, I really don't have a handle on it. Without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth. I'm not interested in you at all unless you've got something I want. Then when I get whatever it is that you've got that I want, I cash aside like so much trash, I go on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Now, I didn't live my life like that one day or one week or till I got a court card. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life until a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the ripe old age of 26 years old, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. But what's significant about that to me tonight is because of the number of friends that I've known for years and years and years showed up. That day when I came to, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But you know what? They should be gone. I thought you were going to hand me some water. I didn't want it. For God's sakes, I made a bad decision. I didn't go to the bathroom before I got up here. You know, I don't have any right, just because I got sober, to have anything good and decent in my life. Not at all. Nothing. Everything in my life that day when I came to in that cell was gone. It should be gone. I don't have any right to have them back. If they are back, it's because of some inner gift that this God has restored in my life because of this program that I've been in. And I don't even know why, to tell you the truth. But I was doing in that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary that day, crawling around on my hands and knees, the same thing I did at my grandmother's knee in church. I'm looking to an answer to this dilemma. I don't know what it is. I would salute him, but I don't know how. All I can say, I'm selling watered bottles of water after the meeting. But you know, that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959. That's when I came to you. I didn't come here because the reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous 47 years ago today to smell perfume. Thought he was coming with more water. You know, I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I'd like to tell you, that was the attraction that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's not what got me here. See, I've been sober long enough and active and participating in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to know exactly what got me here. See, my last time out, I killed me for all intents and purposes. I'd had 2 years doing to me exactly what I wanted to do to me anytime I wanted to do it with enough money as I needed to do it with. And I ended up in the old Los Angeles County Jail, strapped down on a bed with a medical doctor trying to put in my bed, telling me I'm going to die and there's nothing he can do for me. You know, that didn't seem like a bad idea then. And the reason it didn't seem like a bad idea then is because I couldn't go on doing it anymore. I couldn't keep the images up. I couldn't keep the fronts up. I couldn't hide the fear back anymore. Everything I put into my system has no results whatsoever other than the fact that it's just, as long as I'm awake, I'm in trouble. I don't sleep well. I rest well. Death seemed like a great idea. But I lay there in that bed all day and all night, and the doctor kept coming back into my room every morning. And after a period of time, I laid there in the middle of the night one night, and because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." Now, there were no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. And I don't know how many have ever kicked a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I'd been asleep in a long, long time. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back in the bed I just gotten off of. There's a good reason for that. In the back of my head tonight, just like it was 48, 49 years ago, is the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life's terms any longer, I know what makes the big hurt go away. And being an alcoholic of my type, if you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be drunk. I don't have any more choice about that than flying around this room. Not at all. Just because I'm alcoholic. And I don't know that. But I do know one very simple little thing. I do know that my grandmother, who adored me, prayed for me every day of my life. The last time I saw my grandmother alive, she was kneeling at my bed at Manager's Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, when I'm back here resting again from another of my trials and tribulations. My grandmother was saying a prayer over me. And I'm not saying my grandmother's prayers didn't keep me out of harm's way from time to time. Don't get me wrong about that. But I can tell you something I know for a fact. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I could possibly ever get it. Because I can see the avenue of my journey to Alcoholics Anonymous and beyond from the moment of that prayer to this very day. I can see the road just as clearly as I can see you. Because there is no way in God's world that I could have got from that deathbed in the old Los Angeles County Jail to that penitentiary in 1959 on a Sunday morning, sitting on that lawn watching these people walk across the yard. There ain't no way to get there. Guys like me are never supposed to get out of Folsom. Guys like me are never supposed to get out of isolation in San Quentin. Guys like me are never supposed to be in a place up in the mountains where they're trying to rehabilitate me. Not like me. But that's what came in there. And I sit in this meeting. I came in, moved in, and sit down in the back row where people like me sit. I wasn't going to get too close. Somebody might think I'm a member of AA, for Christ's sake. I don't know what AA is. I'm sitting in the back row on my throne of contempt. Got my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler, for Christ's sake, I'd have probably froze to death. There I sit. Staring at two big A's on the backboard. I didn't know what that was. I thought it was some type of an anti-aircraft gate or something. I didn't know what it was. I said to this clown sitting next to me, I said, "What is this?" He said, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." Well, I snuck down in my seat. Anybody see the big gangster hanging out with them winos? Been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Do's Anonymous, you know. So Fiends Anonymous. That makes the hair on the back of your neck sound. So Fiends! Ah! Makes the addict seem kind of candy ass, don't it? I don't know what's wrong with me. I tell you what's funny about it, though. This is what scares me sometimes. Here I am sitting in a room 47 years ago today, staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. But I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what my problem is. If I could tell you nothing else about it, it's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. And I didn't know. I didn't have an idea. I'm fascinated by these people. I don't understand what they're doing. Now, you got to understand, this is before there was any money to treat our illness. This is before there were nobody who wanted to help us so much. These people got in their cars on Sunday, bought their own gasoline. They drove 100 miles up these old back roads, and they spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Now, let me tell you how very sick that is. It took me a long time to figure this out. Here I am. I'm sitting in a penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Oh, but I'm hip. Yeah, I'm so hip, the balls of my feet tickle me when I walk. If I'd had a hat, I'd have had it on backwards. I don't know. How am I going to know? My lifetime was never spent hanging around people like these. In my lifetime, I had never gazed upon people who were given a little just for the hell of giving it. There was no money involved in this. I mean, they weren't working. They hadn't figured out that Medical Association had declared us diseased folks yet. They were just trying to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffered. Now, I don't understand that because I'm a taker. See, takers don't understand givers because takers only hang out with takers. That's why they're all losers. The only thing with takers, you got to keep moving from time to time because you keep eating up this group of takers. And you got to go over here because they ain't left no more. I don't know. It puzzled me. I said to a guy one day, would you get out of coming up here anyhow? You some type of a sicko? Now, I didn't say it like that because I was hip in those days. You know what I mean? Yeah. He said, well, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. I thought about that for a month. He just described why Alcoholics Anonymous is so hard for us smart people. It's too simple. It's called monkey see, monkey do. The only problem is you got to get the right monkey. Funny people, a lot of wolves run around here in monkey suits. Oh, you can spot them. They're leaning up against the back of the wall. You'll have to do that shit. The dance will be starting soon. You know, my old sponsor, Norm Alpe, when he was alive, used to talk a great deal about crossing over an invisible line from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I don't have any qualms with that whatsoever. But I'm here to tell you something that I know for a fact. This is not an opinion. This is a fact based on my experience of sitting in an average of 5 or 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week for almost 47 years. He used to talk about this invisible line, and I don't have any qualms with that, but there's an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over it, you're going to die drunk. Or as a guy I sponsor says, you're either going to get drunk, you're going to die, or you're going to go to jail. That's it. Period. There ain't no if, and, buts about it. You're going to do one of the three things. If you're an alcoholic, see, but if you're not an alcoholic of my type, what the hell difference does it make? Your life is not on the line. What if you're just a heavy drinker? The book says heavy drinkers can quit drinking given any type of reasonable excuse. They never drink again. They don't need any spiritual awakening. They don't need any type of service structure in their life. They don't need to be given a little for the hell of giving it. Then there's this heavy drinker type of people who may be physically addicted to alcohol. But given any type of reasonable excuse, they never drink again. That's what the treatment centers hold up as examples of their thing. But once they get rid of alcohol, they never drink again. They don't need to come to meetings. A lot of them do. They don't need to do these things. And then the book talks, what about the real alcoholic? People like me who may get sober because we get arrested or confined somewhere. But sooner or later, we all drink again. Sooner or later, that type of alcoholic will always drink again unless something spiritually happens to him. The good doctor in our book says, unless he has a complete psychic change. My psychic change came in a very strange way. A man wandered into a meeting one day that I knew did 23 flat years in a penitentiary. He stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me something that all the great psychiatrists and therapists and penologists and lawyers didn't seem to know. He looked down where I was sitting and he said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more. No conditions. After the meeting, I went up to him and I said to him, probably the first honest thing I'd ever said to anybody in my entire lifetime. I said to him, how do you learn how to live? Now, I didn't want to learn how to be sober from that day to this day. I didn't say that because I wanted to learn how to live a good life, to live in a home with a woman that I love, to have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and a host of friends all over the world. Not at all. I just wanted to know how I could go to bed at night and I could sleep all night long without waking up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning with cold sweats. Seeing that picture of me handcuffed between two detectives at a gravesite while they bury my baby brother. With the words of my mother screaming at me, "Look what you've done now, scum, you've killed our baby." How can I sleep through the night without the thousands and countless faces of the people I'd committed those atrocities on out there in the street in the name of being bad? Trying to masquerade my fear behind being something I ain't really. I don't know what to do. That's what I really wanted, only I didn't know that then. I just want to know how I could live, because I didn't think I was going to make it much longer. And he said to me something very strange. It's almost being lost in Alcoholics Anonymous today with all the psychobabble that's being filtrated into Alcoholics Anonymous from these outside sources. He said, "Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it." I went over to the prison library the next day and stole the book. Well, you got to remember, I'm a big-time gangster. I got bad reputation, dude. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to see my name along anything called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I opened up the book Alcoholics Anonymous, not to get sober, live this good life that I live today, not at all. I wanted to prove to you my case was different, that it wouldn't work for me. That's all. The theme of the loser. You don't understand, my case is different. So I opened the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened to me is what happens to an has to happen to an alcoholic of my type if they want to obtain any sobriety and maintain it for any period of time. I started to identify what was written in that book. Now, what I'd started to identify was I started to identify with a non-alcoholic doctor who wrote this thing about the description of alcoholism. He said that men and women drink essentially because they lack the effect produced by alcohol. And what got me was when he started to talk about the phenomenon of craving. That once put alcohol into their system, they develop this phenomenon of craving and they have to drink it to the bitter end. Now, I can't stand here and tell you I've never had any type of opportunities in life. I've had a lot of opportunities in life. I've had people come into institutions where I was at and offer me scholarship to universities. I had a man from the St. Louis Cardinals come into San Quentin and offer me a tryout with the St. Louis Cardinals. All my life, I sat around and badmouthed the people who arrested me all the time because I never got a chance to go to UCLA, play baseball. I badmouthed the people and narcotic officers and the cops who always arrested me and never gave me a chance to play baseball for the Cardinals. It wasn't until I read it and I found out that when I came out, all I did was take a drink. And then the drink took a drink. And then the drink took a drink. And then the drink took me, and there's no UCLA. And then the same thing, there's no baseball tryouts. There's no nothing. There's just streets and corners and gang and atrocities and drugs and all kinds of crazy stuff and straitjackets and all. It just went on and on and on. I could see that. I thought, my God, maybe there is something wrong with me besides what they're telling me. Maybe I might have this thing. And then I opened up the book and I read Bill Wilson's story. Now, I'm a street kid. I don't understand any New York stockbroker. I didn't identify with what he did for a living. I didn't identify with what he drank or how he rode motorcycles, none of that stuff. What I identified with him was what he was like after he got sober after a bender. How he had the four horsemen of terror, bewilderment, fear, and loneliness. Those were my constant companions every time I was without anything in my system. Remorse and guilt and loneliness and fear. And the great fear was that somebody was going to find out that I wasn't all these things I projected myself out to be. Somebody was going to look through that false bravado of mine and that violence of mine and see right through a little scared kid trying to be something he ain't. And it gets to be a lonely thing. And then I found myself sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me this very day. See, as I stand here before you tonight, there's something I've known for the last 46 years of my life. I know exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from an illness called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have your program. And the reason I couldn't have it is I separated me from you. I'm a little better than you, a little worse than you, a little slicker than you, a little hipper than you, but I'm not like you. See, when I became just like you, or at least like the people who wrote our book, it became my great privilege to be allowed to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 5,000 years of recorded history. And you know what blows my mind? I get to do it. I get to live this great way of life. That's what really blows my mind. I don't deserve it. God knows I don't deserve it, but I'm very thankful for it. I walked out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961. I walked out to a world I didn't know anything about. I don't know what it's like to do anything out there. I'm only armed with one very simple little thing. I'd never been armed before. I had the first 9 steps of our program of recovery working in my life, to the best of my ability, while I'm in that institution. I walked out of there with only a dream that I'd conducted in the 19 months that I was an alcoholic and I was at that institution. There was a dream in my head, and the dream was this. Maybe someday, they will allow me the great privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings. Now, I never dreamed that you would allow me to sit in your meetings. I thought maybe you'd have me back in the kitchen somewhere or out in the foyer somewhere with a screen between me and you, because I didn't think you good people would allow a thing like me to sit next to you. But I said to myself, I'm not a guy who chants and does all that stuff, but I said to myself, I didn't say it to anybody else, if they would give me the privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I'm very pleased to be allowed to report to you tonight that for over 45 years of my life, the last 45 years, I have done whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. As I stand here before you tonight, I want to tell you something I know. I don't know anybody who lives any better than I do. Well, I know a lot of people who have more things than I do, but that don't mean they live any better than I do. You know what it's like to live all day long and not want anything for yourself whatsoever? It's amazing. You know what it's like to lay down at night and know that you've done the best you can that day with whatever little tools you've been given? You know what it's like to wake up in the morning and know there's a God that's going to take care of you no matter what kind of a jackpot that you get in? Do you know that the evening comes when you get home from work, you have an opportunity to go out and share this magnificent program with anybody that wants it, for free and for fun, with no expectations of getting anything back, no expectations of even staying sober? It's just because you just do it. Because it's been given to you, so you give it back. Now, I can't tell you ever me alive eating, been a banquet, and every day I've lived out there on the sunny side of the street. The reason I'm alive and well in Alcoholics Anonymous is not because I'm such a book thumper, because that's where our program is, in the book. But somehow or other, I've had to learn how to operate with you in a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I had an ingredient that most alcoholics who come here, I didn't have this ingredient. It had to be brought home to me. It's called consideration for somebody else. The alcoholics of my type do not come to Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how many bookworks they know, how many steps they've taken, or how many treatment centers they've been in, with any kind of idea of worrying about what anybody else does. Alcoholics of my type only come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get something. Now, if you're new, I got some bad news for you. There ain't nothing to get in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is an opportunity to serve. And if you don't take the opportunity to serve in any capacity that you have, you're not going to stay here. Well, you might if you're a heavy drinker or a drug user, but not if you're an alcoholic. I went to a meeting one night. A man walked up to me and said, "I'm going to be your sponsor." I said, "Oh, what's that?" He said, "Well, I'm going to help you get things done that need to be done." I said, "Okay, then what do you want me to do?" He looked at me and said, "Why did you ask me?" I said, "You just told me you're going to be my sponsor." He said, "Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours?" I said, "Then what am I supposed to do?" He said, "Why don't you do what I do?" I said, "Just what is it you do?" He said, "If you do what I do, then you'll know what I do." I just broke up the great mystery of sponsorship for you. Monkey see, monkey do. So we launched on this love-hate relationship, my sponsor and I. First thing he said to me, he said, "Why don't you get a job and go to work? You're a bum." I said, "I'm not a bum." He said, "What are you?" I said, "I'm a member of AA." He said, "You're an AA bum. Bums don't work." He said, "While we're at it, why don't you get off of welfare?" I damn near hit him. I said, "I ain't never been on welfare, Norm Alfie. Don't you ever say that to me ever again. I'm going to hit you." He said, "What do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution?" He's right. So I got a job, went to work. You know somebody stole my first paycheck? I'm going to tell you, ain't nobody screams like a thief when they get stolen from. I ranted and raved and hollered and jumped. And my then wife said to me, "Now you know how it feels." I don't want to hear that. Funny thing happened to me. I went back to work that afternoon. Been working ever since. Nobody stole any more of my paychecks. All my bills are paid. Got a little money in my pocket. Got a little suit of clothes to wear. Groceries in my refrigerator. My kids love me. My grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, I get to see them every now and then. I'm able to take my wife out to dinner. She works. She picks up the check sometimes. I haven't gotten rid of everything. I just had a great life. I really have. I've been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous from the day I came out of penitentiary. Because I'm one of these type of people who've been given a lot. And so much is expected of me. See, if you haven't been given a damn thing here, other than the fact that you got sober, nothing's expected of you. But if you've been given a great deal, if you've been given a whole brand new life, contingent upon doing certain things in Alcoholics Anonymous, then should be something expected of you. I had a little incident happened to me not very long ago, and I want to share this with you because it says so much by me telling you this. It'll tell you all about me. It'll tell you about how I feel about certain things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was out playing golf with a guy that I sponsored, and we were getting ready to tee off, and some guy drove up in his little wagon. He was a ranger. And he said, "Johnny." And I looked over at him, and I kind of recognized him. And I said, "Oh, hi." And I walked over, and he said, "Oh," he said, "you still busy in that Alcoholics Anonymous?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Aren't you?" And he said, "Oh, no. I've already got mine." I damn near hit him with my driver. I said, "You what?" He said, I've already done mine. I'm already done. And I said, "I want to know something." And he said, "What?" I said, "What would you have done when you drug your rusty butt to Alcoholics Anonymous? And all the people who were in that meeting had already done theirs, and they were staying home watching television. Where would you be?" And I said, "Do me a favor." I said, "I'm going to play golf here once a week or every other week. And whenever you see me, don't come near me. Because I'm not going to be responsible for what I'm going to do to you." Now, the only reason, I'd go to show you how spiritual I am. See, I can't stand people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous and get this magnificent program given to them and don't have to do nothing else. This damn sense of entitlement. Oh, you can spot them. Then they wander in and they expect to have the seat set up for them. They expect the coffee to be there whenever they want it. They want to sit down and raise their hand and have somebody serve them dinner. You ever think about getting up and going and getting your own goddamn dinner? Not if you have a sense of entitlement, you don't. I'm not really judging. I'm observing the facts. I tell you another thing that really bothers me. We had a countdown here tonight. Not because I was in the Elite Four, but there were people standing up here over 40 years sober. That was a very nice, polite applause you gave them. And you damn near tore the roof off a guy who's got one day sober who just looked at Alcoholics Anonymous and spit on it. Something wrong with your values. These people kept Alcoholics Anonymous a long line, but these people carried the message to me in a penitentiary. These people gave me a lifeline. They threw it out there. They didn't tell me this is something that you just play with and throw back whenever you get ready to throw it back. You hear things in Alcoholics Anonymous don't make any sense to me. You newcomers are the most important people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Next to me, you may be the most important person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't want to do Alcoholics Anonymous, no skin off of my nose. None whatsoever. I said to watch my mother play with Alcoholics Anonymous for 30 years. Watched on the sidelines. I watched my mother drink herself to death. I sat smack dab in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous watching my mother drink herself to death. Oh, she'd get sober every once in a while because an alcoholic of my type and my mother's type every once in a while will drink themselves sober. But she, like all uncommitted alcoholics, she never stayed sober because she'd get restless and irritable and discontented and take a drink. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. I held my mother's hand while I watched her drop into that alcoholic stupor and die. Have a second before my mother died, if you'd have said to my mother, "Aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? Man, he found out he was alcoholic. He went to that Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and he'd been sober and lived a good life. Aren't you proud?" You know what my mother would have told you? My mother would have said to you, "My son's not alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with the Mexicans." And I guess if you sit down with some of this outside psychobabble that comes into Alcoholics Anonymous on a period of time, they would say to you, "I guess your mama is in a state of denial." A denial is a river in Egypt. My book, Alcoholics Anonymous, does not talk about a denial. It talks about an obsession, a phenomenon of craving. It talks about a delusion. You know what a denial is? It's a lie. And the person who says they're in denial or telling you're in denial is calling you a liar. You know why I know that? Every time I got arrested, I denied it. I didn't do it. I deny that. A delusion is another thing. See, a delusion means I don't know the truth from the false. I think my alcoholic life is the only normal one. Unless I can experience the peace and ease that comes with taking a few drinks. Drinks I see other people taking with impunity. And I succumb to the desire, and then the phenomenon of craving takes over. See, that's what I have. I got this spiritual malady my book talks about. My book calls my illness an illness of a spiritual nature, a malady of a spiritual nature is called. My book does not refer to what I have as a disease. That's a medical term. A disease can be treated medically. The word disease is mentioned one time in the first 164 pages of our book, and it's mentioned in this way. that resentment is the number one offender in Alcoholics Anonymous. From it stems all other forms of spiritual diseases. But it doesn't refer to my illness anywhere in our book as a disease. Now, I can prove that just like that. My first answer to my spiritual malady was a spirit called alcohol. And when you remove alcohol from my system, I become restless and irritable and discontented. Unless I can have a complete psychic change or an intellectual's way of saying a spiritual experience, which was read here tonight, that having had spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all my affairs. That's what it means. I have had some type of a spiritual awakening. That means my spirit has been awoken. That means I live comfortably most of the time. And when I'm restless and I'm irritable and discontented, what it is a matter of untreated alcoholism. I'm not going to enough meetings. I'm not talking to enough newcomers. I'm not making enough coffee. I'm not sitting up enough chairs. I'm not doing what I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. No matter what's going on out there in the world, if I'm not doing these things, no matter how successful I become in the world, or how good my life is, sooner or later, every single thing around me is going to be permeated by my madness. So I have to do certain things. I get to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to put the chairs away in my home group. I get to make coffee on Wednesday night for 800, 900 people who really don't appreciate it. I go to meeting on Thursday night. My sponsor gave me a very wonderful lesson when I was new. He said, Johnny, you're going to have to go to 3 meetings a week and just listen. Just listen. Don't say a word. Don't stick up your hand, because you really don't have nothing to say anyhow. And I said, well, what about when I'm talking? He said, that don't count, because all you're listening to is yourself. It's true. I still do that today. I got 3 meetings a week I go to every week and sit in there and just listen. And see, what my sponsor was trying to introduce me to was a God of my very own. I guess it's written somewhere, be still and know that there's God. Our book puts it another way. It says, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is a basic fundamental idea of God. An old man who was like a father to me by the name of Chuck used to say to me, the nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth. He said, if I could empty myself of self, I would be automatically full of God. And so why I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous is what happened to me tonight. I sit down there in a chair and I listen to the 5th chapter being read. Every single word of the 5th chapter I've been read. I heard the 12th tradition. I listen to Mary talk about the God group. I listen to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just the most amazing thing that I know of. But you see, the magic about that is that when I'm listening to that and pay attention to somebody else, I'm not thinking about me. And when I'm not thinking about me, I'm about as close to my God as I'm ever going to get. So that's why it's necessary for a guy like me, and I don't know about anybody else, why a guy like me needs to do what Alcoholics Anonymous asked him to do. Because my book says I'm selfish and self-centered. It seems to be the root of my problem. If I don't get rid of it, it's going to kill me. So somehow or other, I've had to live on a part-time basis some selfless type of life where I can give a little just for the hell of giving, expect nothing in return and backwards. It's an amazing thing to me how absolutely and totally magnificent this fellowship and this program of Alcoholics Anonymous has become to me, how meaningful it is to me. How meaningful it is to me, and how helpful for the guys that I stick my hand out to, how helpful they are to me. They're much more helpful to me than I am to them. I get much more out of going somewhere and being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous than I ever do going somewhere and being the part of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an amazing program. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wish I could give you what I found at Alcoholics Anonymous. But if I was capable of giving it to you, I don't think I would. Because I wouldn't deprive you of the journey. I wouldn't deprive you of the awakening some moment and uncovering the great truth about life, about the great benefits of service to others, about the great awakening of a God of your very own in your life, about the great awakening of honest love for another human being, honest concern for another human being, something that alcoholics of my type never knew about at all before the fourth day of November 1959. I brought nothing but hate, bitterness, guilt, loneliness, remorse, and atrocities to Alcoholics Anonymous that day. Slowly but surely, because of your examples and the teaching of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, all the promises that are made in our book after the ninth step have come true in my life. I have come to know serenity. I know peace. I have lived very peaceful all day long. I knew I was going to get to see Mary, who I loved for a long time, and all the people here. There's a guy here that I've known for 40 years. 40 years ago, I went in to carry the message into a penitentiary, and they were going to transfer it to another institution because it was strong. And the guy standing there said, I can't go because my custody won't allow me. It was the penitentiary I came out of, and the warden, who was still the warden, you know what he said to that man? He said, you go with Johnny. Johnny will take care of you, take you over to that other institution. He placed another convict in my custody for a day. Do you think Alcoholics Anonymous don't work? Do you think these jackass yo-yos who flop in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous tell you AA don't work? You tell them to come and see me. Yes, Alcoholics Anonymous works, and it works real, real good. But you have to live it. It's the way you have to live. I hear people all the time talk about, I'm taking these steps. You're supposed to live this program, not take things. Live. I was at a meeting not very long ago, and a guy asked me a question. It was a question and answer meeting. He said, I guess your opinion of it, this is not a disease, it's a spiritual nature. I said, no, it's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Not my opinion. That's written in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, drug addiction and alcoholism are two different things. I said, it is. Because I have both. And I said, good for you. And he said, yeah. He said, but I use Alcoholics Anonymous for one thing. And I said, that's the difference between me and you. You use Alcoholics Anonymous, and I try to serve it. There's a tremendous difference between using something and trying to serve something. All my life, I use something or somebody or something or some excuse or some justifiable resentment to get wherever I wanted to go to justify my own bad behavior. And since people like you have come and taught me how to serve something that gave me life, not save my life, but gave me life, because my life is a thing that I don't even believe anymore. It's so wonderful that I sit around sometime and I just drive down the street. I got to pull over sometime and start crying because I see the sunshine. I see the sunset. I hear birds singing. I have friends. I have a host of friends. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to sit around and think that you're somewhere you got to get here. Someplace you got to go, because I see people like people who've been across this podium all dressed up and thinking, man, I got to get there. You know what? I quit trying to get anywhere. I've been all over the world. When I quit trying to get anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been given everything. So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, all I can tell you is this, that every living thing in my life that's good and decent, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and its people. And dear friends, you better believe this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you.